Okay, all right, let's continue on Nun Tes Amud Beis. All right, we got to get through a little bit of the Gemara here. At the bottom, right? Amar Abaye? Is that where you started?
I started from there.
Okay. So the Gemara's like this. Amar Abaye, Lataime de Rav. Now Rav was the one who held that what? It was a suffix. If it's a chazara or if it's shloshim yom, right? So he says, Lataime de Rav, bo echad v'omar lo hareyat mikudeshes li me'achshav ulachar shloshim yom. All right. One guy says, you're married to me with this lashon, this ambiguous lashon, me'achshav ulachar shloshim yom. Ubo acher v'omar lo hareyat mikudeshes li me'achshav ulachar esrim yom. Right, and then another guy comes and says, you're married to me from now and 20 days. And guess what happens after that? Okay. Haray, so then what? So what do you say? Who here is a good logician? We got it right? If it's a chazara, no.
In time,
the
time.
Said something early in time.
Yeah.
So if it's a chazara, then whoever is there first, whoever's kedushin is chal first, is the winner. Right.
It's chal first. Not the one that asked. I thought chazara was the almanas.
That's right. Al tanai. If it's a chazara, then he's doing an al tanai, right? So we don't use the word almanas nowadays, unless we mean me'achshav, right? Almanas is the same as me'achshav. Al tanai means that the chalos is delayed.
What's chazara?
Chazara means he starts out saying me'achshav, he changes his mind, and he turns it into an al tanai. That was he misspoke. He takes it back, and he says, no, I don't want the me'achshav. I'd rather have the al-tanai. Okay? So then whoever's kedushin is chal first, that's the one who's married. Right? That's chazara. But if it's me'achshav, then it's going to be whoever did the ma'isa kedushin first. Whoever's Maisa Kedushin was first. And that'll be him, because he's the first actor. Right? So now, what do you get? You get into the situation where you have three people. Right? The first one says, Me'achshav ulachar shloshim, then Me'achshav ulachar esrim, and then Me'achshav ulachar asara. Okay? So what do we do now? So let's see. So the Gemara says, Tzricha me'acharon, I'm sorry, me'rishon u'me'acharon tzricha get, me'emtsoi eino tzricha get. Okay, so the Gemara says, you need a get from the first one and the last one. As those are the two who are involved in the Safek Kedushin. But not from the middle one. Manavshach, what are you thinking? If it's a Tanai, we can do Mamarashach. If it's a Tanai, meaning what? If it's a Me'achshav, right? If the Kedushin was given Me'achshav, and the 30 days is just a condition of the Me'achshav, so then it's the first one who's married, right? We have to be a little loose with the language. If it's a tanai, means it's a me'achshav. That's what it means, right? And if it's a chazara, then it's the last one who came is going to be married. Why the last one? Because he has the shortest time for his chalos kedushin. Right? Should we get the board for this?
Well, it's not in my car, so.
Boards again?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good? Yeah, when he says, now since he says, May achshav ula achar shloshim yom, and then the other guys have the same lashon, that language is ambiguous. Does he mean to say it's an almanas, basically, where it's going to be chal may achshav in the end of 30 days? Or did he change his mind? He says, I don't want to do a may achshav, I want to do a chalos the later. But it's one of the two. Okay, yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
So since we're not sure if she's married to the first or the last, she'd need a get from both. But the middle guy wouldn't be married to her under either interpretation. So the Gemara says that's pasha. We don't need a baye to tell us that according to Rav, this is the outcome. This is pasha. Anybody with a whiteboard can figure this out, right? So he says, no. Mahu desemo hai lishna mashma tano'o u mashma chazoro viti boigita mikol chad v'chad kom mashma lon. Very interesting piece of Gemara. This is an interesting piece of Gemara. Let's see if we can understand this. What does it mean? Rashi, this is a good point of definition here. Hai lishna mashma tano'a u mashma chazara. Shtei lishonos b'mashma. It itself means both things. Or it implies both readings. Okay. Yesh omer b'loshon tano'ai v'yesh omer b'loshon chazara. Some people say it intending tanai, and some people say it intending chazara. It itself is an ambiguous statement. Well, maybe ambiguous is the wrong way to put it. It itself is a homonymous statement. Or homophonous.
Polyandry.
Or polyandry. Let's get back to that. No. So what it means to say is like this. It's the same. Homophone means it's two words that sound the same but mean different things. So it would be more like a homophone. It means this one statement can mean two different things, depending on how depending on your intention when you say it. It doesn't have. It itself is open to both equally plausible interpretation. And some people say it and mean it one way, and some people say it and mean another way. So therefore. On each guy, we're not sure what he meant. So now it's possible, how can we get the second guy married? It's possible when the first guy said, Me'ach shuvalach ha-shloshim yom, he meant the chazara. And the second guy, when he said, Me'ach shuvalach ha-esrim yom, he meant almanas. So therefore, he's going to be the one who's going to be married.
Doesn't matter.
The second guy.
Does the third guy
matter? Well, they'll all be included in the Salve, right? Because it's possible that each guy meant something different. In other words,
the second guy could be married.
Right.
Even if other people could be married.
Right. So in other words, that's the Chiddush. Hold on. The Chiddush is... Right, maybe the first guy meant to retract. So therefore the second one will be chal. Right? He's learning a little differently. Visheni litano, right. Visheni litano ikavin. That's right. Vishaloka yomin. Vein kan, vein shel rishon. Vishel achron kiddushin. Right, that's the way we have it, right? Now, how can you make it that only the second, you have to make it that each guy is the only guy who's married. Is it possible to say that each guy is the only guy who's married? So, yeah, the way we explain it, that's the way Rashi explained it. So what's the kamash malon? They're not both implied as a meaning in the statement. Ela sofek tana'a, sofek chazara. Vitanahu lekulu avitana. Viloshin chazara, vein loshin chazara, klal. Vi chazara havi, lo havi be lishna tana, klal. Umamarashachim tsoi lo havi kedushin. What do you say? Not so simple, huh? What's the difference between saying two things are mashma, or we're not sure which one is mashma? Right, so I hate these kinds of questions. Hate them. Hate these sugyas. All of these sugyas that have to do with what people mean when they say things, I just find very hard to understand. It's a whole, like, category of cases like that, you know?
Well, you don't want to ask if somebody might just change what?
Yeah, like Nidarim, like there's a lot of these, like Tfos Loshon Rishon, Tfos Loshon Achron, a lot of like these funny rules. Like, it's always, well, just ask the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Jay, can't ask the guy.
Ask someone because they'll change things afterwards. So
the thing is, you can't ask someone because Dvarm Shebelev Einam Dvarm. That's the problem. Right? Dvarm Shebelev Einam Dvarm. So really, we need to know what the words themselves imply. But of course, words are only expressions of people's das. So we have to sort of make a judgment or some kind of objective criteria for what people are meaning when they say things. And like if somebody says something like Hareze Ola Shlomim, does he really mean shlomim, or once he said ola, it's nitfas? You know, these kinds of problems arise. But let's see if we can just get a handle on it. So let's see if we can just get an approach to thinking about this question here. I wish I could like these, but you know, I need some help. I need some help here. I just always find it against. Always just like, I don't know. It's like hard for me.
I didn't really get Rashi. Rashi's just saying there's no way to determine.
Rashi is saying that there's a havam. You know, what was Abaye teaching us over here? What does Abaye have to come along and say? Only the first and the last need to get, and not the middle. That's Pashat, the Gemara says. So, because either it's Chazara or it's Tanai. Either it's Chazara or it's Almanas. Either it's a delayed Chalos or a Lamafreya Chalos. If it's a Lamafreya Chalos, then the first guy's married. If it's a delayed Chalos, then the last guy's married. The middle guy is neither here nor there. He's Nishtahen and Nishtahin Nishtaher. Avi?
Yep.
Nishtahin Nishtaher. So the Gemara says, no, there's a Havamina that it can mean different things to different people. You understand? And the first guy might have meant it as a delayed chalos. And the second guy might have meant it as an immediate chalos, as a lemafreya chalos. Then it would turn out he's the one who's married. So there's a possibility to learn that it's not like the question is, does it have an objective meaning that we simply are unsure about, or is it itself open to two valid meanings? And Abai is telling us it's the former and not the latter. Just to throw that in. Right? It is objective. If it's objective and we don't know, then it can't be the middle guy is married. But if it itself is ambiguous, and some people say it and it means X for them, and when other people say it, it actually means Y for them, then it's possible that the middle guy will be married. So Abaye is teaching us, not how to cheshbon out this thing, but he's teaching us that it only has an objective meaning that we're unsure about, and therefore we can say Meman Afshach. If it means Chazara, then it's the last guy, and if it means Tanai, it means the first guy. But Maman of Shach, the middle guy can't be married. Exactly right.
I don't like that.
In other words, definitively speaking, the question is, when he starts out Me'achshav, that has one meaning, right? And then Ula'achashloshim Yom, has another meaning. So the question is, do we take both as a in their plain meaning, say that they contradict, and conclude that he changed his mind? That's the Chazar Svar. Okay? Or do we say, no, once he started out with Me'achshav, that sets the groundwork for how we interpret what he says next?
That's an add-on.
Mashma. What I don't understand is, what does it mean, Shtele Shonos Arba Mashma? Isn't that why we're confused? Isn't that why we're confused? Because Shtele Shonos Arba Mashma over here? No. There's a difference between being confused because Shtele Shonos Arba Mashma, but one of them is right, and Shtele Lashonos Arba Mashma all the time. Right? If it's one, if one of them is right, then we have the Mamonoshach. If it's always Shtei Lashonos Arba Mashma, that means to say, it always has the possibility of two meanings. But what's hard to get down to the bottom of is, isn't it clear it has the possibility of two meanings? Otherwise we wouldn't be in doubt. So what's the difference between saying it has the possibility, what's the difference between the possibility of the two meanings that throws us into our doubt, but yet we say it's objectively one or the other, and the possibility of two meanings that we say, well, that's it. It is a statement that has two meanings. Right? Like, there are certain statements you could say are ambiguous. You don't know. You can never have too much of X. Does that mean no matter how much you have is never too much? Or is it saying don't have too much of that because it's bad for you? That's not clear. Two things are implied in that same statement. It's just an ambiguous statement. You can never have too much chocolate. Yes, that's good advice. Yeah. So it's an interesting question. I mean, it's an interesting question because, like we were saying before, we're always interested in what the person's intent is. I mean, that's really what we're interested in, always. Okay, the only thing is we need an objectification of his intent in order for us to deal with it. Right? In his inner world, his thoughts are good, but halacha and kiddushin and these types of matters are where he has to act objectively in the external world. So he can't do things in the external world with his inner thoughts. We've got to bring them to the to an objective framework, right? So that we can all, you know, have a meeting of the minds. But ultimately, my words and your words, or the man's words and the woman's acceptance, are so that they have what they call a meeting of the minds, right? We're always trying to get down to the minds. But we can't access the mind other than through the words. So it's an interesting kind of an interplay, right? That we're really interested in the das, but we can only deal with objectifications, and language is an objectification of the das. Yeah. It's like it's interesting, in the Nidarim, we have a little bit more leeway, I think, where it's really more of a personal type of an issue. Like, if a person says something ambiguous, we will trust him on what he meant.
Marriage isn't personal?
No. You really mess up other people's lives with your marriage. But Nidarim is just your own life, you know what I mean? But marriage, I mean to say, it's not internal. It has to do with other people's, it affects other people's, you know. So over here, yeah, Rafi, you want to say something?
Yeah. You trying to figure out so much.
So when you have a simple, when you have a clear statement, we'll say that's an objectification of his das. Right? So we do consider the language to be an objective statement. And we won't allow anybody to say, no, when I said yes, in my language, to me, yes means no. We will not allow that. Right? We will not allow that. We said, no. You chose, you expressed an objective statement, and that's how we go. We now take your statement as an objective indication of your das, and we don't believe you about it anymore. So what happens when the person says something that objectively sort of cancels out or loses objectivity because it has no clear objective meaning anymore? So that apparently is this question. Do we therefore say now we have no choice but to try to understand what his das was? Or do we say no, we can never go down to das? In other words, do we say, well, the objective expression sort of didn't come out with any clear objective meaning? So then we're going to have to accept in this case to try to understand from the language what his das was. In other words, the objective statement is just a window into his das. And if he has a statement that itself sort of counterindicates itself, one says now and one says later, we have to say, well, that itself is a window into his das. And since on an objective level it could mean one of two expressions, so we'll say it has the possibility of meaning one of two things as an expression of his das. And also as an expression of his das, and also as an expression of his das. So for everybody, it'll have the possibility of meaning one of two things. Could mean one for Reuven, it could mean the other for Shimon. Because our simple mechanism of objectification didn't really come out, so now we have to go down to what our purpose of objectification is. Our purpose of objectification is to get to his das. The objectification of the statements, the objective statements is just a vehicle of getting down to his das. So once it fails to have its clear, unequivocal objective definition, so we'll say, okay, then we have no choice but to say it could stem from this das, and it could stem from that das. This very statement could be the result of two deos, and we just don't know which das it's coming from. But for everybody, that doubt would remain. Let's go a little further. Or do we say no? Language, once we say that we don't accept the internal mind, and we have to access the mind through objective statements, all we can accept are objective statements. And all halacha can deal with are objective statements. And we no longer entertain the possibility of what is in this person's, we no longer entertain the question of what is in this person's mind. The objective statement is not our window into his das. It itself is the substance of halachic reality. And there's only one reality of what this statement means. We just don't know. We can just say we don't know. In other words, the point is like this. I'm trying to say is it has to do with the somewhat more philosophical question of what does language ultimately represent? How do we use language in halacha really? Are we saying we need a manifestation of his das language is really a manifestation of his das, and we have certain objective criteria to say this is his das, this is not his das. But certain times it's ambiguous, since we can't clearly and unequivocally say that this represents das A and not das B, then as a representative of das, we can only say it represents two deos. But language is only an expression of das, and therefore an ambiguous statement will be an ambiguous representation of his das. And for Reuven, it could have come from das A, and for Shimon, it could have come from das B. And therefore, even the Emtsoi would need a get. Or do we say, no. That's true. That's what we're, ultimately, you could say, that's the purpose behind language, so to speak. But halachically speaking, language and dibor becomes its own objective institution. And we no longer regard the question of what did he mean. We just regard the question of what is the meaning of the statement. Because halachically, we can only deal in the absolute objective frameworks. We don't deal with even the subjectivity of his das. We don't deal with the subjectivity of his das. So then the question only becomes, this statement, what does it objectively mean? And if we say we don't know, that's fine. But it can't mean two different things for two different people. Because it's only a question of what can we say objectively this means. We're looking at it now as like universal language. That's it. There's only, we halachically speaking, you say things, that means you engage a mechanism of universal language to achieve your goals, and we no longer interview you about what you thought. We only analyze the entity of language that you produced. But in terms of viewing it as an entity of language, it has to have, by definition, an objective definition, an objective meaning. We could be in doubt how this type of a sentence gets translated into a universal objective framework. But we can't say that it could be objectively one thing for A and another thing for B. So by definition, by the very definition of language, that's really the machlokus here. How does halacha deal with language?
Isn't that a skill?
Which one?
In and of itself, the second thing that Maskana, you're saying that really we do assess each statement objectively.
Right.
But it could be assess each one objectively. Once we define it as so.
It's like if the Gemara asks a shaila and comes out with a teiku. Right? It means to say there is an answer, there is a halachic definition, but the Gemara just doesn't know it. But you can't say that for him it'll be it'll come out one way, and for him it'll come out another way. Halacha is apart from anybody's mind. It's not. It's an objective thing. Objective things can be. We can have a doubt about how does the objective system of halacha deal with a certain case on the right side of the line or on the left side of the line. We don't know, but we know for sure one thing, it's either on the right side or the left side. So if we're viewing language as like a halachic objective institution of expression, then we can say, well, we don't know, we don't have enough knowledge to determine the rules of how statements get concretized and obtain an objective meaning. And it's possible that this statement falls to the right side or to the left side. It's possible that the balance is tipped a little bit towards Chazara, or the balance is tipped towards Tanai. And whichever way it is, that means the Hachra'ah of the Chachmei HaLashon have determined that just like yes means the affirmative, this statement means Chazara. You say, when I say yes, I mean no, we don't care. You say, I had in mind tonight, we don't care. We don't look to you anymore. We don't look to your das anymore. It's not a matter of Nemonis anymore. So, but objectively speaking, There's a hachra on what this means. But what I'm saying is, what's underlying that machlokas of whether we want to know what he meant or what the statement means is the question of how you approach the relationship between language and the das. We all know that the das is the reason for language, but we want to know how do we treat the language as an expression of his das. Does it become an objective system now, or does it always remain definitively an expression of his das? And then we have certain rules of when. In other words, if I would want to affirm, maybe shaking my head is not enough. I have to enunciate. But there's no difference, really. Essentially, there's no difference. It's just a more objective expression of what you're thinking. Shaking my head is also an expression. It's just not enough. Right? But even when I get a word out, it's only valid in the sense that we can say, this is what you meant. Or this itself is a concrete expression of your das. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Is it a concrete expression of your das, or is it an objective system in its own right? Of course, the system is drawn and developed from a certain universal idea of what people mean when they say things, but there could be close calls on what people mean when they say certain things. Suffolk. Then we just call it a Suffolk. My point is the ambiguity in the statement is exactly the same, which for both sides of the argument. But the question is, what is it an ambiguity in? Is it an ambiguity in the medaber, in the one who spoke? Is it an ambiguity in his in what he meant? That's the havamina. Then it could be yes for him and no for him. Or is it an ambiguity just intrinsically in the sentence itself, and the sentence has its own life? And the sentence as a structure has its own life. Then it's an objective question. What is the meaning of this statement? Well, we don't know. Objectively, it could mean this or that. But it's only a question on an objective plane. Then we no longer can say, well, for him it could objectively mean this, and for him it could objectively... That's an oxymoron. Right? To say for him it objectively means X, that's an oxymoron. Him is personal, objective is impersonal. Right? But the question of whether, so that's what I'm trying to explain. The doubt itself is the same. The question is, what is language, and where does the doubt lie? If language is just expression, then the doubt lies in what he was expressing. It could be different for him and different for him. If language becomes its own concrete objective system that you have to engage in order to facilitate halachic change, then we have to say there's a definition to language. And we can only say, based on our definitions of language, we're just not sure. Teiku, what does the statement mean? But it only means one or the other. For everybody. In other words, to put it a little bit clearer, we all know halacha works in an objective way. There's no question about that. But did that simply mean that it can't be in the realm of your mind? And that's all language does? It takes your mind thoughts into an objective arena, meaning to say into an arena that we can all observe, speech? Or does it even mean even more than that? That speech itself is its own objective subject matter. In other words, when we say halacha doesn't deal with the subjective, does it simply mean it can't deal with what's going in your mind because we don't have access to what's going on in your mind? Therefore, we need speech to give us access to what's going on in your mind, but really, we're working with what's going on in your mind. Or to say, no. Halacha has to deal on an absolutely universal objective level. And therefore, speech is treated as its own objective universal subject matter. And we can't say that it's possible to have meaning A for this person and meaning B for another person. is it simply a negation of the subjective, the purely subjective, meaning the purely internal thoughts that we use language for, or is it more? Is it a positive objective entity? So anyway, so that's a baye. Now, yeah. Go ahead.
How does halacha view in the enlightenment?
So Kamash Malan, we view it as a completely objective science. So maybe this will help us in the future questions. Maybe this will, yeah. Good question. Okay, let's go. Let's take the next case. This is the important case. So now it's like this. Ula Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Now Rabbi Yochanan came along and said something astounding. He said, Afilu mea tofsinba. Okay. Not only does she need a get from the first and the last, but even 100, even if there were 100 men who did this, it seems one with a shorter duration than the preceding one, each one with a shorter duration than his predecessor, 100 people could be tofacer. V'chein amar Rabbi Yasi, amar Rabbi Yochanan, afilu mea tofsin ba. So what is his reasoning? So is his reasoning like the Havamin of Abaye? Is his reasoning like the Havamin of Abaye? So Rav Masharshia says, Brei de Rav Ami says to Rav Asi, I'll explain to you, Rabbi Yochanan, in a very colorful explanation. Each one made themselves like a bricklayer, like a layer of bricks. Each one made themselves like a row of bricks. What does that mean? Each one left his friend the space. Okay, so first of all, Rashi explains that it's not Abaye's Havamina, right? Because Tofsin is not Mashma Lashon of Suffolk. Tofsin is not, according to Abaye's Havamina, only one really was married to her. We just don't know which it is because of all the possibilities. The Havamina of Abaye, right? Would mean that maybe he meant Me'afsha, maybe he meant Lachazman, we just don't know. But really only one is Tofes. But Rabbi Yochanan sounds like he's saying there's an actual tfisa on each one. Each one is actually married to her. Right, wouldn't have been such a big chiddush, right. So he says it's like the bricklayer. How? Let's see Rashi. Hamasad levenim v'rochav kulan shoveh. So the guy's laying bricks, right? You played with blocks when you're kids, right? And each one has an equal width. So you don't line them up one on top of the other, because then the outer layer will just fall right off, right? If you had a lot of bricks you wanted to make a wall out of, if you just line them up one directly over the other, that's stupid. They're just basically individual rows of columns of brick, and they're not really joined together by they're not intermingled with each other, so the outer rows will just peel off. Okay, so what do you do? First you make a row one next to the other, then you make a row on top of it, and each brick you put on top of that row, you put it half on one and half on the other, right? And you leave a space. So when you lay the brick, you make one, two, here's your first row of bricks. Your second row, you go like this. Each time you lay a brick on top, you're leaving over a space on the brick. Right? You leave over two spaces on top of each brick. Correct? Mm-hmm. So you're leaving a revach for the next brick. Okay? You're leaving a space for the next brick. What, this one and this space? Where? Let's see. Leo Shnia Yosheves Miksosa Olel Miksosa Al Sheetzla. Right? Venisha Revach Gambishnia. Leos Shlishis Miksosa Olel Vachain Kulam. Right. So, in other words, when you put the first one on, you're leaving a space for the second one. Right? And the second one is leaving a space for the third one. Right? Masada techila zu etzel zu. That's the bottom row, right? The choser masada shura acheres. And when you're doing the second row, so you do like this: nosin achitzona, the very outer brick, mishucha lechutz. Oh, he has it the other way. Is that what you're saying, Matt? It's mishucha lechutz kidei shiyisha revach b'tachtona lios shnia yosheves miktsasa leo miktsasa al shatzla. So wherever you put down that first brick, I don't really care. The first brick you're putting down to leave a space for it and another one next to it. When you're putting it on this brick, you're not hogging up the whole brick. You're leaving a space over here on this brick for the second brick to go. Okay. Venisha revach gam bishnia lios shlishis miktsasa aleha v'chein kulam. And then when you put it on this one, you're leaving on the second brick a place for the third brick on top of this one.
It's the third brick.
Right. V'chein kulam hachanami kol echad motza mokom zman panei l'kiddushin v'tafsu kulam l'osira. So too here. Each guy, this guy was the first layer. Or whatever, this guy is the first brick. He left all of this space for another brick. And then when this guy put his brick on, he left all of this space for a third brick. And when this guy did his brick, he left all of this space. Each guy is leaving over space for another guy to lay his brick. Therefore, they're all going to be tofes. V'tafsu kulan la'osra. One second. V'chein kulam. He says v'nisha revach gam b'shnia lios shlishis miktsas alea. V'chein kulam. Hocha nami. Kol echad motza mokom zman panei l'kiddushin v'tafsu kulam la'osra. In other words, he's saying just like when a guy lays the brick, he always leaves over a space for another guy to share on that brick. Each time you put a brick on top of the bottom layer, you're leaving a mokom ponoi for someone else to put his brick on. Okay? So too over here, b'derach moshel. When the first guy married her, mikan v'yad shloshim yom, he left a space for someone else to come in and put down his kedushin that first 30 days. And when the second guy came in and married her, mikan v'yad esrim yom, he left space for a third guy to lay his kedushin, namely that 20 days. And when the last guy came in and said, mikan v'yad asar yomim, he left a 10-day space for somebody else to come in with his kedushin. So you can all, each one left an open place for kedushin for another guy to come and take it. So then it turns out they're all tofes her in kedushin. And she's married to 100 guys.
That's only if it's al tanai, right?
He's not learning it. We don't know what he's saying. We don't know how he's learning it. Yes, it's basically al tanai. Correct.
If it was me'achshav, then the first one finished.
It's not so simple, though.
Why? I guess that's what I'm asking.
It's neither way that we understood it before. Right? Because the way we understood it before, either it's me'achshav or it's al tanai. Right? But if it was me'achshav, then it would be the first guy. If it was al-tanai, it should be the latest guy who has the shortest time. He's saying something weird. He's saying they'll all be married to her. Because nobody took up, nobody negated all of the, her in Kedushin. Nobody laid their Kedushin completely on top of her Ishus. Each guy left a little bit of Ishus for the other guy to put his Kedushin on. We don't really understand this, but that's what he's saying. It's not a suffake. It's not a suffix. It's intrinsically a kedushin for all of them.
Something different than
Abaye. Because Abaye says an objective statement, and we don't know which one it is, but it's only the first or the last. And it's not like the Havamin of Abaye, where it's a suffix on everybody. That's not what a bricklayer does. So this language implies that there's some structure that he set up in his deal to actually allow another Tfisas Kedushin simultaneously with his. Okay?
Mikan
Vach Shloshim Yom. Ah! So does it sound like that? So if it sounds like that, then that would mean to say that Rabbi Yochanan is taking the shita of Rabbi, not a Rabbi Eliezer, that's not possible, but it must be the Rabbanan according to the Havamina, to the question of Rabbi Abba.
No.
If you're going to say like Jay, and Jay is in good company in saying this, because we always pass like Rabbanan, we can't pass like Rabbi Eliezer. So if you're going to say like Jay is saying, and this is basically the Ravitz shita, it means to say that, what does he mean to say? He means to say, Hareya mekudeshes li chutz mi ploni, chutz mi misha bo besoch shoshim yom. Hareya mekudeshes li vasur lekol ha'olam, chutz mi misha bo mekadcha besoch shoshim yom. But then that means to say he's accepting shiur bekedushin. And we all, like the Rabbanan, who don't accept shiur beget, and Rabbi Ami's conclusion was Yatzav Ahayasa, so we shouldn't accept the Shiur B'Kedushin. So the Ravid learns, that's true. That was Rabbi Ami's conclusion, but that wasn't Rabbi Yochanan's conclusion. Rabbi Yochanan held Kinyan Koldu is good by the Rabbanan. He doesn't learn the Hekesh. Does not learn Yatzav Ha'isa. That's why I said to you last week, or the beginning of this week, that we see clearly that if you don't learn the Yatzav Ha'isa, it means definitively that the Rabbanan would hold Kinyan Koldu is enough. Because Rabbi Yochanan is not learning the Yatzav Ha'isa, and he's sure, therefore, that the Rabbanan would allow this type of a Kinyan. Okay? This is the simple way to learn the Sugya. Because there's no new ideas. You're just manipulating positions. Okay? What's hard is to learn that Rabbi Yochanan holds no Shiur B'Kedushin, the Hekesh of Yatzav Ha'isa, and yet allows this case. That's what the Ramban and the Ritva try to work out. That although, if you were to say, Hareya Mekudeshes Li Chutz Miploni, it would be absolutely no good Kedushin. When he says it like this, it's still good. Even though effectively he's letting other people in. Okay? That's what the Ramban and the Ritva try to explain, how that works. And that's what we'll try to struggle with. Okay? Now there's really two points over here. We could stop and just do that. If you guys had enough of this already. But what's interesting is the Shakla Vatari of the Gemara, where it tries to ask questions on each side, on Rabbi Yochanan basically, and it brings up some very interesting cases that the Ramban and the Ritva go through, and I mean, I think it's interesting to see.
Should you do the Gemara first?
I think so. I mean, you can have time. I guess it depends on how much time.